on. Is that not like the best movie ever right there? Oh my word. Man, so excited you're here with us tonight. My name's Kurt. If you're here for the first time, man, we hope it's the first of many, many times. And make sure you hit that connection card because that's how you're going to get your free movie tickets, which will be coming your way this week. And we're going to look at this movie here in a moment and just kind of unpack some of the spiritual threads, the fibers of faith that this Christmas movie really kind of raises for us. Now, let's make some noise for those joining us online this weekend. Crosspoint Online, YouTube Online, Crosspoint On Demand. Man, so good to have you guys join us from wherever you may be. In our state, our nation, or our world. Now, this is an exciting weekend because it's Spread Some Cheer weekend, and so we've got meal boxes coming back this weekend to bless our community. And you know, every year when we begin to talk to the schools and kind of figure out, okay, what are the needs, it just seems like the poverty rate is always kind of high, and we have no idea. Honestly, you know, we have no commitments to the boxes when we have those conversations back in like October and November, and we just kind of see what the needs are, and we say, okay, God, what do we feel like we can do, and then how do we maybe go a little bit beyond that? And so every year, we don't know if that pile of boxes is going to disappear. The one thing we do know is that those boxes each have a family attached to them. And so this year is 175 families. That's what we're providing meals for. And if you took a box, then make sure it comes back Sunday, December 11th. If you're watching today and it's Sunday, December 11th, make sure that box gets here to the Crosspoint campus because these are going out into the community on Sunday afternoon and they are going to be blessing people. And you might be sitting there going, oh my gosh, I didn't realize we were already at the delivery weekend. I didn't pick up a box. I used to participate in this or I want to participate in this. If you are feeling that, you're not too late. You can actually make a donation and fund a digital meal, a gift card for a meal, a family of 8 to 10. $60 will provide that, and you can do that at crosspointweb.org or on our Facebook page, and you can be a part of all the goodness. I mean, this is one of the most amazing weekends where there's just a lot of love flowing out of this place. So, still opportunities to participate in that. Now, this weekend, I just want to make sure, before we get going, we're all on the same page as we go through the next few weeks, because the next few weeks are going to be pretty amazing. And one of the things I want us to know is the service schedule. So this is our last weekend of normal services, meaning this is our last weekend of the early weekend service and two Sunday morning services. December 11th is our last normal weekend. And so after this weekend, we've got six Christmas Eve services, and these are going to begin next weekend, and that's going to be December 18th and the 23rd and the 24th, and that means there's no early weekend service next week. It also means there's no Sunday morning services next weekend. And so we're putting all of our energies over the next few weeks into Christmas Eve. As Vince said, it's a great opportunity to invite somebody to come sit with you. People will accept that invitation. If you got a scraper when you came in, man, take those, use those as invites. And we want to invite you, if you're going to be traveling, to come early. That's why we do the December 18th service, Christmas Eve before you leave. And this is also our capture service, so you can be a part of the studio audience. You can be a part of the group that helps all those online experience the mystery and the wonder of Christmas through this experience. And so reserve your tickets. There's an after party. I mean, all the fun things. Santa is actually going to be there. And so make sure if you want to be a part of that, you reserve your tickets today. And then we're going to do it five more times, December 23rd and 24th. And then we're not going to have service on December 25th. So no services on Christmas Day. We'll be off that day. Our weekend services are the Christmas Eve services. And then the following weekend, January 1st, we're going to be completely off. No services. This is actually our annual Sabbath rest weekend here at Crosspoint. And this is something we've been doing for a number of years. In fact, the hundreds of volunteers that make things happen around here, they think this is a really good idea because they put a lot of blood and sweat and tears and energy into making things happen to make sure services are provided and kids' experiences are provided, and they feel pretty good about it. I know not everybody feels that way. Sometimes people are like, oh, I didn't know we weren't going to have service on a weekend. But you know, for those who you know make things happen, we want to give them a weekend to rest. And so the last weekend of the year, December 29th, January 1st, don't show up. We won't be here. We will have something online for you that weekend. And it's just kind of a cool weekend. And, you know, then we come back the following week, the very first full weekend of January 2023. We're going to have a brand new series called White Space for Your Life. We're going to be talking about what it means to make margin for the things in our life that matter the most. And so we're excited. It's going to be an exciting weekend as we get going again in 2023. Now, the other thing that makes this kind of unique and challenging at the same time is on that last weekend of the year, we have no joy box. So what that means is in church, like rhythms and kind of sequencing, the last 2 weekends of the year are the two biggest giving weekends of the year. And so when we decided that, you know, we felt like God was saying, hey, it's a good thing to give people some rest on that last weekend of the year. That means we're not going to be here for one of the biggest giving weekends of the year. So if you want to make an online or a year-end gift, you can do that online. You can do that through the physical joy box. You can drop that in the mail. You can, you know, make a stock gift. Our business people will get in contact with you. And I mean, all those ways that you can help make a contribution, those will show up on your tax as a tax deduction for this year. And then you can make that if you get it in by December 31st. So all that's going to be a part of the next few weeks as we wrap up 2022. All right, now who's ready to get into Christmas vacation? Anybody ready? All right, here we go. Let's take a look at this.
Folks, Merry Christmas.
There he is. Look at how big you got.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, Mom.
Knock on the door.
You know, they took a pint of fluid out of my lower back.
You see this mole? This mole in my neck? You think it's changing color?
No. Well, you keep touching it, it's getting redder.
I got hemorrhoids. Can you believe that?
A mother.
Isn't that terrible?
You're not getting the garage space.
You did my automobile. I'm doing the parking. Russ, you want to help me?
They're not sleeping in my room. I want to go crazy.
So there, sweetheart. Your grandma Nora's got a real painful burr on my heel.
And if you rub it for me, I'll give you a whole quarter.
Okay? A quarter.
And I'll give Audrey a quarter, too, Audrey.
I'm going to park my car in the garage.
This is what Christmas is all about. I'll park the cars and check the luggage, and I'll be outside for the season.
Oh my gosh, you may be feeling that way already. I think I'm ready to just check out, be outside for the rest of the season. Yes, I know. I mean, it's the craziness, the family, the dysfunction. I mean, all the things, right? And all Clark wants, I mean, all he wants, he's just a kind of unending optimist. He wants this perfect, quiet, old-fashioned family Christmas. And you and I know that is not possible, right? And if you aren't familiar with his story, I mean, it just seems like nothing ever ends up going the way that he plans. I mean, everything from the tree to the lights to the family showing up and staying way longer than they were expected to stay, to the Christmas bonus not coming through, you know, in the way or form that he expected it to come through. I mean, all the expectations that come with the holiday season. And did we mention the extended family that likes to stay a little bit beyond their stay? Yeah, I mean, that's always a part of that. And ultimately, then his prized tree that he cherishes goes up in flames. And in the midst of all of this, I mean, as things just continue to unravel, I mean, Clark begins to look for meaning. He's like, why is this happening? Where's the purpose in this? And I think most of us get that. I think most of us connect with that because I think we have this insatiable desire, you know, to kind of make meaning and make purpose out of even the most random events in life, especially the negative events. I mean, the events that seem at times to have no purpose. I mean, the things that on the surface, you know, you go, okay, this almost indicates that there's not even any purpose in the world. Maybe everything is, in fact, random. In fact, maybe, you know, Richard Dawkins was right. I mean, maybe when he said, you know, some people are going to get hurt and some people are going to get lucky and you won't find any rhyme or reason in any of it. Maybe he was right. I mean, maybe there is no justice and there's no design and there's no evil, there's no good. It just all happens randomly. Man, that's certainly one approach. But see, what I find, and I think what you probably find, I know what Clark finds as we see through this movie is, you know, that he wants to find meaning. He's not willing to give in to the sense of there just being this random sense of purposelessness. And so we find ourselves scrambling to find the good and the bad. You know, we try to find the positive and the negative. We're trying to find the purpose in the midst of the painful things we experience. And I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but I've just discovered that I rarely obsess about things that in life and try to make sense of them when they're going well. I don't know if you've noticed this about your life, but I mean, nobody's sitting around going, oh my gosh, I wonder why my parents didn't get divorced. I mean, you just usually don't ask that. Or, you know, I don't know why my kids are so healthy right now. I mean, it's amazing. I don't know why they're all getting into the college of their choice. That's a fantastic thing. We just generally don't obsess too much about, okay, why did that happen? And what's the meaning behind this? We kind of expect those things. We just don't generally spend energy on things that are going well. And perhaps it's because, you know, they're suiting our purposes, and as long as life is good, then we're good because we want life to be good. So when things are good, we don't ask those questions. But when the exceptions happen, and when the hiccups happen, and when, you know, the interruptions come, and the call from the doctor that we didn't expect, or perhaps the call from our kids' school comes, or, you know, that thing in our relationship or in our marriage that we've just been putting a lot of energy in and we're just not seeing movement at all, we begin to say, okay, where's God in this? And God, what's going on and what's the reason for this? And let me just tell you, if you've asked any of these questions, I mean, God, where are you and why is this happening and isn't there any other way that you could actually, you know, bring this about? Let me tell you what you are. You are what I would refer to as normal, because that is very, very normal to ask those kinds of questions. In fact, just this week, I had kind of a really cool moment where I had about 45 minutes in my car, windshield time, and I got a call as soon as I got in the car from a friend that I hadn't heard from for quite some time. And man, as soon as we started talking, he was pretty broken up. And when I say it's kind of a cool moment, it's almost like God gave me that time when he needed it. And as I'm listening to his voice cracking and breaking on the other end of this call and him saying things like, Kurt, I just, I'm not being the person that I want to be. And everything I do just doesn't go the way that I want it. And I put energy and time into things and it never seems to end up in the direction that I want it to go. And there's nothing that kind of pulls at my heart more or tugs at my spirit than when I hear grown men like just emotionally kind of distraught over how do I make sense of this? And you know, I just think it's really interesting because I feel this way at times. You probably feel this way at times. We see Clark in the movie. You know, it's usually only when things begin to really get off the rails that we're interested in knowing, okay, what's the plan? And what actually is the meaning behind what's going on right here? And so I want us to just imagine for a moment that there is more to life than meets the eye. I want us to imagine that there is a transcendent God who actually has his own plan for humanity. And every once in a while, that plan intersects your and my life. And what if that plan actually requires a disruption in your plan every now and then? Well, as it turns out, this is kind of exactly where we find the Christmas story. You know, the Christmas story is kind of a reminder that life is perhaps not as random as it seems. And it's a reminder that we really are a part of this overarching narrative in life and that you and I are actually invited into it. And that Christmas, you know, it reminds us that even from time to time, God has a way of interrupting your and my plans and our stories. And it causes us to look up and we go, oh my gosh, God, what's going on? And why is this happening? And can it be any easier than this? And what help me make sense of this? Could you have done this in any other way? And you know, it's interesting because these questions actually reflect your faith. And sometimes we think, well, no, I mean, I actually feel like I have a lack of faith when I ask those questions. But, you know, here's kind of a really interesting but subtle difference. There's a difference between questioning God and asking questions to God. So if you find yourself asking God some of those questions, I mean, those are actually a reflection of your faith and your trust. So I want to take us into the Christmas story this weekend. I want us to get into the kind of the heart of the Christmas story because we're at the point of the season where, you know, we're beginning to head toward Christmas Day. And I just think this story is fantastic in helping us see that when life is not going the way we hope, that perhaps we're not alone. And so Luke, he provides us with one of two of the birth narratives in the Christmas story. Now, this is one of our next steps this week. I actually encourage you to jump into the Christmas story and read it this week. Read Luke chapter 1 in the Bible app or in your physical Bible. Maybe you want to make that a step and just say, hey, I want to get involved. Maybe you've never read the story before, and this week you can just kind of immerse yourself in this story that we celebrate at this time of year. Now, Luke is kind of cool because he actually talked to everybody he could find. He talked to every eyewitness that was there, and he wanted to make sure he got the story right, and so he knew if he told the entire story as it had been told to him that most people would not believe it. And so he actually begins his narrative kind of assuring us, hey, listen, I did not make this stuff up. And he's also trying to help us understand, I'm not the only one that's trying to kind of piece these different narratives and experiences and eyewitness accounts together. And so here's what he says. He says, many of us have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled right here on the ground in the first century, right in our presence, right among us. Meaning, I'm not the only one that's discovered this. I'm not the only one that's seen this. And then he goes on, he says, with this in mind, he says, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things that you've been taught. Now, as we can best tell, Theophilus was a first century Christian. He was somebody who'd grown up around the stories of Jesus, but he apparently wants to have like an ordered account of Jesus's whole life. And so Luke's kind of like, hey, I'm going to lay out an orderly account for you. And so Luke begins to piece it together. And so here's how he begins the story. He says, in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. Now, Elizabeth had some kind of connection to Mary. We don't fully know what it was. One translation of the Bible says they were cousins, Mary and Elizabeth, Mother Mary, Jesus' Mother Mary, and Elizabeth were cousins. We're not fully sure, but that could have been the case. So in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, to a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. So right here, this is just another arranged marriage that's about to experience a massive interruption that would just about change everything as you and I know it. And so Luke says next that the virgin's name, think about this, very simple, was Mary. Now, what's so fascinating about this is I don't think Luke had any idea when he wrote this down what he was about to create. I don't think he had any idea what happened in the future or was a result of him just saying the virgin's name was Mary. I don't think he had any idea that cathedrals would be named after this little phrase right here. I don't think he had any idea that wars would be fought, that missionaries would be sent, that books would be written, that heretics would be burned at the stake over this one phrase right here, that men and women would actually give their lives in order to get this story right here out of the first century so you and I could have. I don't think he had any idea. Now, the other thing that we don't really have any idea about is we don't really know much about Mary's life when the angel interrupted her. I mean, she was likely a teenager. All right, her life would have been very regimented, very planned out. It probably looked like something like this. She was going to get married. Her parents decided the guy she was going to marry. She probably hasn't met him yet. She's going to meet him the day before she gets married, or perhaps on that day. Her parents are going to decide where they live. Her parents are going to decide when they have kids so they can have grandkids. And if she's lucky, which she probably isn't going to be, but she might even get to meet her grandkids one day if she lives long enough. But most people are never going to know Mary because Mary's going to grow up in this dust bowl of a town, this little village called Bethlehem. And she's just going to be an ordinary woman, and she's not going to be known because she's just going to be in this long lineage of this dustbin of history. And she's going to be another random life with a bunch of random children, and some of them are going to make it, and some of them won't. And yet God decided in this moment to touch down right here at this point in history. And it seems very random to us, but as we continue to get into the story, we begin to realize it was actually a very, very purposeful moment in the mind of God. So it says, the angel went to her and said, greetings, you who are highly favored, the Lord is with you. And Mary was greatly troubled at his word and wondered, what kind of greeting is this? She's like, is this the good witch or the bad witch? And she's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if this is good or bad. I've never interacted with an angel before. I mean, she's probably a little overwhelmed. But the angel said to her, do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. Meaning you have been singled out, Mary. You have been singled out for a very specific purpose. God has a narrative going on, and you are showing up in his story. But this is going to require a severe interruption in your story, at least according to the plans that you have. And so here's what's going to happen, Mary. You're going to conceive and give birth to a son. And you're going to call him Jesus. I mean, just think about how specific this is. And he will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants, and his kingdom will never end. Now, I'm pretty sure Mary was not really thinking about kings, probably not thinking about kingdoms at this point. I mean, honestly, there hadn't been a kingdom probably in her lifetime, at least in the region. And so she probably didn't even care really all that much about Israel's story, if we're honest. I mean, the only thing she's really caring about is her own story. She's like, hey, I'm supposed to get married. I'm supposed to start a family. I mean, what about the wedding? What about the party? What about all the stuff that's supposed to happen? That's probably what's on her mind right here. And yet, without questioning, she actually then asks a question. She says, well, if this is going to come about, how will this be, Mary asked the angel, since I am a virgin? And the angel answered her, the Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Now, that is loaded with all kinds of innuendos right there. Now, imagine how terrifying this must have been to Mary right here. I mean, she's probably like, angel, seriously, Seriously, how can this be? You just said I'm going to be highly favored? This is not what I expected. I mean, you said that I'm going to be with child. You said that there's going to be a spirit that's going to come over me. Angel, what is going on? This is not a part of my plan. What about my husband? What about my wedding? I don't know how this is going to work, but this is not going to work. I need a new plan. And the angel goes on. The angel says, so the Holy One is going to be born, and he will be called the Son of God. Now, just out of curiosity real quick, I want to do a quick poll. And those of you at home, you can play along with this as well. How many of you, before you walked into this room today or you tuned in online, how many of you have ever heard, before I started reading this story, this phrase, the Son of God, referred to in connection with the person of Jesus? Just out of curiosity, how many of you have ever heard that before? Yeah, oh my gosh, look at that. It's amazing. Almost all of us, all of us. Isn't that amazing? This is exactly what they said was going to happen over 2,000 years ago. And yet, do you realize how blasphemous this would have sounded to Mary? I mean, hey, Mary, you're a teenage girl. You're not married yet. You're going to have a son, and you know what his reputation's going to be? He's going to be known as the Son of God. And yet, it happened. And here we are, halfway around the world, 2,000 years later, and it's not a surprise to any of us. Luke goes on, he says, even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. I mean, just notice the certainty again right here. And she, who was said to be unable to conceive, is in her sixth month, for no word from God will ever fail. Now, in the original text here, in the Greek language, this is kind of Yoda speak right here. If you reorder the words the way they're laid out in the Greek, it actually says this, for not impossible with God is anything. For not impossible with God is anything. What do you think to yourself right now? What comes to mind in your life right now that you feel like is just nearly impossible? You're thinking, I don't see a solution in this. You know, I think this is where the Christmas story and the movie we're looking at this weekend, Christmas Vacation, I think this is where these intersect in our lives, because we get the impossible. And we get things when they're not trending in the right direction. I mean, everything's unraveling and we just can't see the solution. I mean, everything seems to be falling apart. I mean, for Clark, he can't even get his stinking lights to work, right? I mean, he's out there busting his tail trying to get his lights on. He can't even get the lights. He's probably like, God, where are you? I mean, nothing seems to be going my way, for not impossible with God is anything. You know, at the same time, this is the place in Mary and Joseph's life where things begin to get pretty complicated as well. I mean, think about this. Mary's pregnant. She's a teenage, unmarried young girl. She has no explanation as to why. And for those of you who are Catholic, let me just tell you, man, if you have a Catholic background or you grew up Catholic, I mean absolutely no disrespect in what I'm about to say, but I just want us to use our imagination for a moment. I guarantee you there were moments where Mary, she was probably like snapping her fingers saying, Angel, I need you to come down here right now. I need you to explain what's going on to my mom and my health teacher, because they are laughing at me. I mean, I told them what's going on. I told them exactly what you told me, but everybody is laughing at me. And then talk about bad timing. About a month or so before the baby's due, Caesar Augustus issues a decree that a census is going to be taken over the entire Roman world. And Joseph, I mean, he has to go home to his hometown, and he does the math in his head, and he goes, oh my gosh, Mary, I've got some bad news, and I've got some really bad news. I mean, the bad news is, you know, the Roman emperor issued a decree, and we all have to go back and register in our hometown. And as I do the math, I mean, that means I'm probably going to miss the birth of our child. And of course, Mary's like, oh, no, you're not, because I'm going to go with you. And he's like, well, Mary, that actually leads to even worse news, because the only way to get to my hometown is a 120-mile donkey ride, and you were almost at term. And Mary says, I don't care. I'm going with you. And of course, you know the story, right? I mean, 120 miles on a donkey. She's 9 months pregnant, probably had a few extra stops along the way. When they get to town, guess what happens? There's no guest rooms, right? There's no guest rooms available. Little Miss, you're highly favored. Little Miss, like, I've got a special plan for you. Little Miss Mary, something amazing is going to happen with this baby. And she's like, you mean to tell me that you didn't even order a Hotel 6? There's no rooms. And while they were in Bethlehem, she gave birth to a son. And they named him Jesus, just as the angel had instructed them to do. And then as if things weren't bad enough, they begin to move from uncomfortable to unsafe. For see, about that time, they got word from King Herod that he was feeling threatened by the rumors of this newborn Jewish king. And in typical Herod style, he unleashes this wave of terror all across the region. And he wants to assure that no baby boy is going to survive its infancy. And I'm sure Mary's going again, hey, angel, seriously, where in the world are you in this moment? And so Mary and Joseph, they have to escape to Egypt, 200 miles or so further from home, 200 miles further from family, 200 miles further from normal, 200 miles further from anything that they'd hoped, dreamed, the lives that they'd planned together. And then Mary gets the news of the unimaginable. And see, this is the part of the Christmas story that we don't like to talk about very often. In fact, we almost can't pause and stop for too long because it just totally strips away all the merriment and the spirit of the Christmas season. Because see, early one morning, Herod's stormtroopers, they go into the city of Bethlehem and the cities around in the region of Bethlehem. And as people are waking up their young sons and daughters for school and getting them ready, sending them out the door that day, those stormtroopers slaughtered every 2-year-old boy and under in a random, senseless, purposeless act of violence. And while I'm sure Mary felt some relief in knowing that her son had been taken out of that situation, she felt the weight for the rest of her life of the reality that the birth of her son, the news of the birth of her son, incited Herod's rage. And she was never able to step foot again in that little village of Bethlehem. I mean, where's the purpose in that? I mean, the needless slaughter of dozens, hundreds of young boys? I mean, she was warned, right? I mean, she was given a heads up. I mean, but what about all the other innocent moms and dads who weren't given a heads up? I mean, where's the purpose in that? God, where are you in that? I mean, God had the presence of mind to warn me, she had to be thinking, but like, wasn't there another way around this? And see, she will never know. And you and I will never know. And often, times there's no way to really connect these dots. I mean, there's so many puzzle pieces that just don't fit with the box top as we envision it. And of course, Jesus, he grows up to be a toddler, and then he becomes a teenager, and then eventually he becomes an adult. And as you begin to read through the Gospels, you know, we begin to see that Mary is a bit confused at times about, you know, the behavior of her son. I mean, she's like, I don't understand what he's doing. In fact, a lot of people didn't understand what he was doing. And there's moments, even at one point, in fact, maybe you've heard this story where Mary and Jesus' brothers and his family, they go and they show up at like a public gathering that he was at. And they try to like physically remove him from the gathering because they're just observing. They're like, man, this does not look like it's going in the right direction. And Jesus wasn't winning friends politically. He definitely wasn't, you know, winning friends with your religious establishment. And all of a sudden, they're just realizing if things don't change, I mean, it's going to be down and to the left for our son. And so, you know, she just has this heart for her son who turned rabbi, who now is a prophet, and who she knows has something special on his life, but most people don't understand yet that he's the Messiah. And then a couple years later, a little highly misfavored by God, Mary, she gets to imagine the unimaginable, experience the unimaginable pain that no mother wants to go through as she gets news that her son is now in Jerusalem. And she stands outside the courtyard gates as her son is beaten within an inch of his life. And she hears the gore, she sees the gore, she smells the gore as he's taken away to Pilate by the religious leaders who insist on his execution. And she stands there in the street and she weeps. I mean, she cries as she watches her son carry his own cross to the place where Rome's enemies are crucified. And she stood in that crowd and she watched him die. I'll say that again. She stood in the crowd and she watched him die. Why? Why? What purpose could this possibly serve? And how could this be the end of a storied life that began so miraculously? I mean, think about that for a moment. She literally watched the worst possible thing happen to the best possible person she knew, her son. Which might describe the messy, unexplainable middle that perhaps you find yourself in right now. And as we think about this story, I mean, yeah, we know how it ends. And we know that Mary, I mean, she got in a matter of 2.5 or 3 days to see it all come full circle. You and I don't always get to see that. But not in that moment. She stood there and she watched it. I mean, Miss Highly Favored, Miss, hey, I've got a special plan for your son. Hey, God is going to do something. His life is never going to end. And in this random act of violence with no good end in sight, it looks like everything was lost. It looks like God had lost control. And yet this right here, this was the crosshairs of God's deepest involvement in our world right here as he sent his son into the world to pay for the sins of mankind, for you and for me. And so that thing inside of you that longs for purpose, that thing inside of me, that thing inside of Clark that wants to make sense of why is this happening, that thing inside of you that wants things to work out for the good, that wants to make sense of the random, even when it seems purposeless, even when it seems like the illness is unredeemable, even when it seems like the job loss is just unredeemable, even when it seems like the situation in my marriage, there's no way that we're gonna be able to work through this, even when it seems that there's nothing good that can come out of the overarching story of my life, that the story of Christmas reminds us, and this is so important, the story of Christmas reminds us that perfect faith is not faith that moves God. All right, I don't know what you've been told about faith. I don't know what you've been, you know, how faith has been defined for you, but perfect faith is a faith that moves us to trust God even when it doesn't seem that he's going to be moving, or at least moving in the direction that we want. And I don't know where in your life you might feel that right now. Where perhaps you feel a bit like Clark, where you feel like you're right there on the threshold of hell.
Just if everyone just goes home before things get worse.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
Son? I love you. We all love you. But this is a terrible night. Nothing's gone right. It's a disaster. But you losing your temper with the whole family only makes things worse. And you're too good a father to act like this. In years to come, you want your children and your family to remember all the love you gave us and how hard you tried to make the perfect Christmas.
Oh, I just...
You just cocked it up. It's okay. It happens.
All our holidays were always such a mess.
Oh, yeah.
How did you get through it?
I had a lot of help from Jack Daniels.
Isn't it amazing how dads, good dads, just have a way of like bringing context in moments like this? And when things just don't seem to be going the way we want. You know, I was reminded this past week of a story of a good dad. It's an author, speaker guy. I used to follow quite a big guy by the name of Rob Bell. He has these little docu-short stories. And in this one story, he talks about how he went on a hike with his son. His son was 1 year old at the time, and he talks about how he put him in a backpack and he carried him on this hike, and they set out early one morning, and they're heading around this lake through the woods. And he said it was just one of those perfect days. I mean, it's one of those pristine days where, you know, you can see for miles and you can hear every bird in the trees. He says it's just one of those moments you want to freeze in time. And he said as they were kind of rounding the lake and they were coming to the second half of their hike, as they turned the corner and began to head back, all of a sudden they saw in front of them this big, dark, ominous cloud. And he said within a matter of minutes, like, we started feeling raindrops. He said we didn't prepare for rain. And so he said he reached back and he talks about pulling his son's hood over his little one-year-old head. And they continued making their way back. And he said, before long, you know, my son was doing pretty well, but as the rain began to pick up more and more, and then the thunder began clapping, and the lightning began flashing, and the trees began swaying, he said, before long, my son is screaming, and ultimately he's like shrieking at the top of his lungs. Now, it's interesting, because as you think about this picture of a dad and his one-year-old son walking through a forest in the middle of a storm, I mean, think about what this must have been like from this one-year-old's perspective, this little toddler named Chase. I mean, Chase, he for him, the storm was his reality, right? I mean, for him, all he could see was the storm. He couldn't see anything else. For him, all he could see was the lightning and hear and feel the thunder and feel the increase of the pitter-patter of the rain on his body. I mean, all he saw were the trees swaying all around him. That's all he knows. I mean, his reality is the storm. And see, the one thing he doesn't realize is that his dad would do literally anything to get him home. And perhaps for you, you know, as you think about, you know, things perhaps not trending the way that you want. Maybe life is just not coming out the way that you envisioned it. Maybe the season is just kind of unraveling. I mean, wherever this season finds you, maybe all you can see is rain around you. You know, this father, this dad who was on the hike with his son, he talks about how as they approached that last half mile, he pulled his son out of the backpack and he pulled him up to the front and he wrapped his coat around him and his arms around him. And he said, we just began to make our way through that last half mile. And he said, I just whispered in the ear of my son, son, everything's gonna be okay. Son, I love you. Dad knows where we're going. We're gonna make it. Son, everything's gonna be okay. I got you. We're gonna make it. This dad, he talks about how he always had these kind of concerns about how years later, he's like, what if my son comes back and all of a sudden he's in like therapy or something, you know? And he's like, Dad, you know, he drags up this memory of that hike when he was 1 year old. He's like, Dad, how could you have taken me through the storm? Like, why did you let me go through that? I thought you loved me. I mean, it exposed me. And I mean, it created all this junk inside of me. I mean, how in the world could you let me experience that? And you know what this father says? This blows me away. Because I think it's the heart of our Heavenly Father. He says, if my son were to say that to me, you know what I would say to him? I would be crushed. I'd tell him, oh my gosh, son, that moment was one of the deepest, most intimate memories I've ever had with you. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. Man, if this Christmas season finds you feeling like things are a little less than up and to the right, I mean, if this season feels a little more messy than Mary, man, I just want you to be encouraged that Christmas reminds us that we have a Heavenly Father who's so near, who cares so much, that he's willing to interrupt, take the risk of interrupting your plans with the chance that you might just be able to experience the incredible nature of his. And Mary kind of says something very similar at the end of her story right here in a very, very personal way. In fact, when the angel Gabriel shows up and, you know, finishes telling Mary, hey, here's what's going to happen and here's how your life is going to be permanently interrupted. I mean, she had no idea about the details. She had no idea about the donkey ride. She had no idea about the slaughter of the innocent. She had no idea about Herod. I mean, she had no idea that you know, there's going to be a song written one day, Mary, did you know that your son was going to be taken off a cross and that you're going to get to watch it? She also had no idea that 2,000 years later, people would be gathering one time a week to celebrate the name of her son, just like we're doing right here, sometimes more frequently even than one time a week. She had no idea. She didn't know any of that. It's just that she got to the end of the conversation with the angel, and she said this right here. She said, I am the Lord's servant. Meaning, this is not what I planned. This is not even remotely close to what I had in mind. This is not what I anticipated as a mother. This is not what I anticipated as a wife. This none of this was in my picture. But I am the Lord's servant, Mary answered. May it be to me. May it be to me, as you've said. Even though it's going to interrupt my plans, even though it's probably going to disrupt at least my picture of what I had in store and what I was hoping for, may it be to me. And see, here's the thing, you and I can't help it. We can't help when negative things happen to look for purpose. We're created to look and make meaning out of these things, these random, seemingly random and disappointing moments. And sometimes we, you know, make sense of it immediately. Sometimes we make sense of it eventually. And sometimes, honestly, we don't find it at all. But let me tell you, when you find yourself praying to the fairy God who didn't meet your expectations, and you find, oh God, where are you? Because you didn't come through the way that I hoped you'd come through. When you find that perhaps your plans are a bit interrupted and not necessarily trending the way that you'd hoped, just remember, man, you're in good company. Christmas reminds us that you're in good company with Mary, the mother of Jesus. This teenage girl who modeled a way forward through the disruptions. Modeled the way forward. May it be as you have said. I am the Lord's servant. Let's stand. I want to pray for us. Heavenly Father, we want to thank you for just this story and for showing up and for working through such imperfect people and in such imperfect moments and being willing to get in the mess. And perhaps Christmas is a lot less merry than messy. And God, I just pray that right now you would give us ears to hear and eyes to see. And give us the faith of this teenage Mary who shows us the way forward. Help us to be able to surrender our plans, to live with open hands about our future, to actually enjoy, to delight in the things that you bring our way. Because at Christmas, God, we're reminded that as much as we may have plans and dreams and hopes, and you created us for that, God, that periodically it requires that our plans get interrupted. And so may we be able to say like Mary, let it be.